So first, what do I mean by an eco-reformation? So I got this term from the Lutherans, but don't hold that against me. So in the time of the Protestant Reformation, the major issue that they were working on at that time was describing what salvation looked like, right? So are you saved by faith or by works? And who gets to be saved? Is it the elect? Is it only a few people? Or is everybody available, allowed to be saved? And those kinds of questions. And so we went through that and kind of worked through those issues. It had to do with hierarchy and kind of flattening out the hierarchy. And so that was the great work of that time, was to kind of democratize faith. And in our time, the ecological situation is the great work of our time. And this isn't limited to people of faith, of course. We all have a piece in that, especially in the countries that use the most resources. But as people of faith, what is our role? And is there something that we can offer as Christians or as Quakers that is particular to us and to our tradition and that helps us to live out care for the planet out of the ways that we have come to know how to be a community together? So this eco-reformation needs to be comprehensive and systematic. It's not just us doing individual actions and hoping that it makes a difference, but working together to reform the whole system and the whole way that we think. So not just, you know, how can I do something that's a little bit more efficient, but how can I reform the whole way that we are thinking about what it means to be the people of God? And just like the Reformation reformed the ways that we thought about the church hierarchy, can we extend that out into recognizing that we're part of an ecosystem, part of this created world, and this is the place in which God connects with us? So there's a quote from this Eco-Reformation book that I wanted to read for you that says, "Without losing the foundational fruits of that revolutionary reformation and building on them to address our current context, we need a new Copernican revolution." So something as mind-blowing as shifting to that Copernican worldview where the sun doesn't go around the earth, but the earth goes around the sun, right? From human-centered to being creation-centered, from focusing on God's relationship with humans alone to focusing on God's relationship with all of creation, from fostering the extreme individualism of our culture to fostering the common good of the planet. We humans need to see ourselves embedded in the rest of nature and find our proper place and role in it, both our responsibilities and our limitations. And this is not exactly a new concept. That's why we can call it a reformation, because we're reforming back to something that we have understood and that we maybe have forgotten or not put as much focus on. So this is something that is present within our tradition. And this is kind of an exciting time to be alive, but also kind of terrifying, right? Because we have this great opportunity in front of us to be part of something new, something that is emerging in our faith communities. And that's great, but it's also challenging. So as Keith mentioned, my little branch of Quakerism split recently, and we're having to figure out what it looks like to be Quakers in this time and place in new ways. And that's not always easy and not always comfortable. And it takes us outside of our comfort zone. It takes some work to figure out what does it look like when we actually follow what the Spirit of God is doing, rather than just following the things that we've done for years, right? So how do we discern where the Spirit is moving rather than just continuing on doing the same things that we've always done? But at the same time, we can learn from our traditions. And so even though we don't necessarily like Mr. Augustine here all the time, he every once in a while said some intelligent things. So I'll read this quote. I forgot to put it on my paper. I guess I have this one. So Augustine said, "Others, in order to find God, will read a book. Well, as a matter of fact, there is a certain great big book, the book of created nature. Look carefully at it, top and bottom. Observe it. Read it. God did not make letters of ink for you to recognize God in. God set before your eyes all these things God has made. Why look for a louder voice? Heaven and earth cries out to you, God made me. Observe heaven and earth in a religious spirit. So it's this idea that when we look for God, I think I can turn this on. Is this better? No. Sorry, it's not working. No, it's a red light.
Uh-oh.
Okay. So you can read the quote there. But this idea that there's the Bible, which is a helpful tool in learning about the story of people connecting with God across time, and there's also the book of created nature, where we can see God in the natural world and connect with God, whether or not we have that written word or not. That's a pretty Quakerly thing to say, right? We all probably believe that we can encounter God in our own experience. That's how George Fox came to understand God in a real way. Even though he had read the Bible so many times, he needed that personal experience when he's out spending the night in a haystack, right? So now we're getting feedback. So this sense that there's the written word that is helpful, and there's also the book of created nature, which also helps us. So when we have both of them, that gives us twice as many places where we can look for and find God. And this was not an original concept to him either. So there were a lot of people expressing this kind of sentiment back in the early days of the church.